Joining us in the studio, Jake Shepherd. Jake is a founder and a director at Asynthesis. And we're going to be talking about how some of our most rational decisions are quite the very opposite. A very good morning.
Good morning, Howard. I also want to just say thank you to you for inviting my daughter Yakira along.
Yakira, very, very good morning to you.
Hi, great to be here.
And Yakira's not just, any old guest. She's trained in radio.
She's trained in radio, but mm-hmm. I think what you and the listeners might not realize is she's actually been here as a shadow presence at all our other radio
shows. True.
Because I bounce off all of my ideas.
Oh, it's more than that. You've even told us stories about Yakira and some of the issues, some of the ways in which you've dealt with certain circumstances.
For sure. And so Yakira's a constant presence, and it's so nice to have her with me.
Well, it's not a new thing. I mean, Howard's daughter also with the music.
Excuse me, I'm switching off your mic, young lady. That was uncalled for to rat me
behind
out.
Behind every man's success is a daughter behind him.
That is actually pretty true. Pretty true. And a wife rolling their eyes. All right, it is 8:39. Yakira, you're studying communications at RDC in Israel.
In my third and final year of communications, I'm specializing in visual content studies, so that's everything from directing, editing, filming, camera work to help create content. And one of the things that I studied was radio, and I had a radio show, so it's really great to be behind the mic
absolutely
again.
Absolutely incredible. I've had the privilege, actually, of seeing the studios at RDC, and wow, many of us dream of studios like that. State of the art. Really, really incredible.
100%.
All right.
I wanted to just discuss this whole concept, and I really kicked off from last week, where I fell for something called hindsight bias when you asked me about Larry Tesla. And I thought, let's just explore that a little bit more and realize that most of us, we think we're like 90% logical and rational. And 10%, we're a little bit irrational. But I think the reality is almost the opposite. I think most of us are totally irrational, with a bout of rationality thrown in, for good measure. And Jonathan Haidt, in his book, The Righteous Mind, he describes this relationship as a metaphor, as the relationship between a rider and his elephant. Mm-hmm. And the elephant basically does whatever he wants to do.
Right.
Knock over that tree there, knock over this thing there, and the rider's along for the ride. He might think he's in control and telling the elephant where to go, but he really isn't. And so the elephant's the thing or the part of the mind that is making all the decisions. So what's the rider doing? So from the elephant's perspective, he actually quite likes the rider, because the rider's the rationalizing PR agent to explain why the elephant's made all of these stupid decisions in the past, and putting the elephant in a good light. But what we do is we actually see ourselves primarily as riders, but we need to acknowledge that we are primarily elephants. In the sense of how we make our decisions.
Absolutely love that.
And we see this, so we always try and then justify, and you know, we're not rational beings, we're rationalizing beings. Mm-hmm. And one way of seeing this is in cognitive supportive bias, and we see that with, you know, a lot of people, or ex-South Africans, spent years working out whether they should stay, whether they should go, what they should do. And the moment they go, it's obvious. All the bad things and how terrible this South Africa is
really stupid because it's so obvious to them.
Exactly. Yeah. So what you're seeing there is the whole concept of choice supportive bias, where you've made a choice and now you're looking for reasons to explain why the choices are.
So I read a similar analogy some time ago, a few months ago, where he describes as in a similar kind of a way of driving a car, and you've got this rational, you've got intellect, and you've got emotion, and you need a balance of who's driving the car. But if emotion takes over, you find yourself, of course, on a completely different path, but it's intellect's job to explain why you're there, and that's how
so that's exactly this
it's
point.
Exactly this kind of an idea.
And I think what is quite amazing there was a book in 1994 by Antonio Damasio called Descartes' Error, and he's obviously referring to René Descartes, the 17th century French philosopher,
right?
Who really talked about the duality and of body and mind, our cognitive rational processes versus our emotions. And what this whole book's about is the fundamental error in that assumption is that they are two different things. And what he does is he shows that emotions are intrinsically looped in to the decision-making process. And it's not that you can, like you would think that maybe the best decisions are made where I keep emotions out of the picture and I use my logical, rational thinking and I really think it through, I'm going to come out with a great decision. And as soon as emotions get in the way, that's where decisions go wrong. And what he does in his book is he shows that actually emotions are integral to the decision-making process. And one of the ways he does it is he looks at patients that have had different forms of brain damage. So one of the forms of brain damage is a particular area in the prefrontal cortex, which is the area that listens to the emotions from the limbic system. And when that patients with that particular brain damage, when they present, what actually happens is they have an inability to make decisions. It's the whole decision-making mechanism.
So we think it's not emotional, but actually we need emotion in order to make decisions.
All of our decision-making is ultimately based on emotions. So it's that emotion that gives us the initial bias towards one particular option. And then our rational mind comes in and maybe does a bit of a check, says, well, let's just check that and see if I agree with that. Mm. But really, we always tilt it in a particular area. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense from a historical point of view. We need to be reactive to the world and often very quickly reactive to both threats and opportunities that are available to us. Mm. But those threats and opportunities, we have to actually, you can imagine from a threat point of view, predation. Right. Is a threat. Right. Inclement weather, you're standing at a cliff edge. You've got to actually react incredibly quickly. And opportunities like searching for food, food coming along. So what actually happens is our emotional centers immediately trigger us into a freeze or a sort of flight sort of mode. And we immediately bias towards a particular action without our cognitive mind or our rational mind really being into the loop. And then it gets brought into the loop and we can start checking things. And I think what we need to recognize is that that's how you have to make decisions. Decisions can't be made rationally. Your emotional processes always get looped in, and they're necessary for decision making.
Time is 8:45. I'm chatting to Jake Shepherd. He is a founder and director at Synthesis. And we're talking about making rational decisions. How rational are they really? So Jake, bringing it down to a more, not basic level, but a more practical level. You know, we were schooled in this thought that, well, business is never personal. It's business. And we don't make emotional decisions at work. We make rational decisions at work. Some of the worst business people I've ever come across are people that claim that whilst acting completely emotionally, because you couldn't call them on it because it was so difficult for them to even recognize emotion. Yeah. I think we are evolving as a society that we're recognizing that emotions and work actually do go hand in hand. And so they should, because if you're not passionate about your work, well then stay home. But, so we know we need emotion, but it's been a very slow process to accept when it's appropriate and when it's not, and how much emotion is appropriate and how much isn't. Because at the same time, we can't be talking about our feelings all day when there's work to be done.
So and do you maybe not think that's why then women have not been historically allowed to be in top positions in business?
Because they have been viewed as emotional.
Because of,
we're not allowed to. I happen to have had this conversation offline with Jake, and I can tell you this is a rabbit hole we don't want to go down.
No, because I'm thinking it's literally because of the lie that we've been told that you cannot be making emotional decisions and that men generally don't.
And I think what we just need to recognize that all of us actually, in our core, we have to make emotional decisions, and that's where all decisions actually come from.
Yes.
And when we recognize that, don't stigmatize people that they've made emotional decisions. We all have to make decisions based on emotions, but then really to recognize what they are. So I think that's really the next step, if you want to call it, of the evolution, is to recognize that we are going to be making decisions that are biased because of our emotional state. And if we can start to recognize those areas of bias, we can start saying, all right, let's take that step back and let's relook at that decision like I did last week, thinking cut and paste was nothing.
Right. So let's just talk about that for anybody who wasn't listening. The reason we actually kind of got to this was because I had mentioned the passing of Larry Tesla, who was the guy that had invented cut, place, find, and replace. And, I thought it was quite a cool thing, but then I think anything technological is cool because I'm a little bit there. So Jay kind of looked at it and said, well, okay, sort of what's the big deal around that?
Yes.
And then my
problem there is I was using hindsight bias, where I was trying to view the world then. It's a shortcut. It's an easy shortcut to make because you look at the world now and you say, well, is that such a big invention now? As a way of trying to answer the question, is it such a big invention then? Because it's quite hard work to actually put yourself into that sort of frame of mind of then. And then all it really was is me falling into hindsight bias.
So how do these biases, because that's really what it is, and that impact on our rational decision making?
Well, I think they all do. They have to impact. But I think what we have to do is then try and recognize it and then actually have strategies to work past it. So what we could look at is confirmation bias cognitive dissonance as one particular type of bias. And I think a way to try and understand it is the way we're listening to Honeji's beautiful music before. And we all love nice, harmonious, beautiful music. And music that jars with us, that we don't like, we turn away from. And I often hear the older crowd, like me, we love the golden oldies. But the new garbage that the musicians are putting out today, we can't stand. So that aspect at a very deep emotional level, we connect it to music, so to speak, that resonates with us and ideas that resonate with us. And anything that grates against us, whether it be music or ideas or views, we actually have an intrinsic gut reaction against. And I think that's actually what's behind cognitive dissonance and confirmation bias.
I just want to read a message. Unsigned says, I was in a meeting and lots of people were talking and the one guy was trying to get to talk and couldn't get a word in. And instead of acting out, he simply said, guys, I'm getting very frustrated because I haven't been able to talk. Recognizing of his emotion actually then was seen as positive and not negative.
And that's 100%.
That's a great example.
It's a great example. It shows being self-aware, which is already quite a high level of maturity.
It's true that, because he's actually aware of it. And he's recognizing his own stuff, his own frustration. He's not saying, you're not letting me speak and you guys don't let me get a word in.
And then he's made a decision. I'm not going to act out on my emotions. I'm going to act in a calm way, but not based on my emotions. And then but tell you that this is how I've had to get you. I've had to work through these frustrations in order to actually address you. And that's quite an effective way of actually addressing that.
Yeah.
But in terms of if you're confirmation bias or cognitive dissonance, one of the ways you can actually, work against it or try and, realize that you're falling into this trap is just speak to people who disagree with you, who hold different views to you, and actually hear their points of view. And I can actually confirm that Yakira is one of those people for me, because she thinks quite differently than I do.
Yes.
And I can then try some of my more radical ideas out on her, and the pushback actually helps me work through where I've made mistakes.
Right, because what we do is we kind of put something out there, and we see, we almost test our view.
Yeah.
And that's a problem with not testing your view and with not being able to communicate is that, and it goes to another conversation that we've had, is it goes back to reaffirming a story that you've told yourself in your own head, but never being tested. It just becomes, it becomes fact whilst actually it might not be what it should be.
Yes. And those stories actually are the things that create the emotions.
Time is 8:52. I'm Howard Feldman in studio with Jake Shepherd. We're talking about making rational decisions with emotion. All right, in studio, Jake Shepherd and Yakira Shepherd, and we've been talking about using the concept of trying to understand when to make when some of the decisions, the rational decisions that we make, actually come from an emotional place. Yakira, during that song, you were saying something quite interesting.
So we keep saying that you should try not to fall into these traps of the ways of thinking, but we need to acknowledge the reason we have these automatic shortcuts for thinking. And it's not because we need to make instant decisions. In part of it's because of that, but otherwise we would be faced with emotion, information overload, where we would constantly be stuck because we wouldn't be able to move. We wouldn't know which way to turn, right or left. You need to have that gut instinct, that instant shortcut decision making, in order to be able to function as a human. But when it becomes to the big, comes to the bigger decisions, that's when we need to try and contradict and understand, why did we think that? Why did we make that decision? Because for everyday life, it's so important to not succumb to information overload.
So in other words, and I think that's a very good point, is that we risk overanalyzing everything, because why am I doing this? Well, hold on, maybe that's confirmation bias, maybe that's sure. An emotion based on something that an incident in my past with my relationship with so and so, etc.
So the best pilots use autopilot as well. So I think that's what we're trying to say, is that autopilot, which are your emotions that make most of the decisions on a day-to-day basis, should I have tea now or coffee?
Right.
Those sort of decisions need to be taken off your hands so you can free yourself for your intellectual capacity.
Otherwise we'd be
dealing with other things.
We'll be exhausted.
But I think we just need to recognize those big events, those big decisions that need to be reevaluated, and recognize then how we might have been biased up until now by our emotions, and just put a check on it. And just say, well, maybe there's a better decision in this case.
So, Nati, your thoughts on this?
I just think I need David and Jake in my life every week, honestly, because.
So David is our psychologist in private practice. He's in studio on Thursday. So you know what, Tizanati? Listeners are blessed because they do have David and Jake.
Honestly.
Every week.
No, but you are right. Like, I think a lot of the time, if you have to now sit down and think, why do I have this bias all the time? We'd never move. So I think you must check up, but up until a certain limit.
Definitely.
And I like the Yakira's point about the overload, because otherwise it is absolutely impossible to function. We can do nothing. It's really, really great. But yet use that, and then becoming, Ansan says, and then becoming decision fatigued. Absolutely. We will be decision fatigued. You can't. It's just too much. And I know that at times when I'm more stressed than others, it becomes harder to make a very simple decision, because you actually don't feel like making a decision, because you do become fatigued by some of the big decisions that, so unless we've got a place to be able to say, okay, yeah, that's the decision, you know, I'm just going with it, and maybe I can analyze it later, but I don't need to reanalyze anything either. Whether I had tea or coffee, to use your example, doesn't really matter at all. But maybe some other decisions about, you know, while, for example, we put, the outbreak of coronavirus as a news headline.
Yeah.
an interesting point. My brother-in-law actually made to me, he pointed out, in a decision there are two parts. You first have to make the right decision, but then you have to make the decision right. And both actually are part
absolutely
of the decision.
Absolutely brilliant.
So I must just tell you, making the Netherlands coronavirus case a headline, it was an emotional decision, but then I rationalized it.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. You were the elephant, not the elephant rider. Well, there you were the rider, in fact, not the elephant. It is 9 a.m., a very, very, I hope you had a good, enjoyable show. Certainly we did. We had a great week with you. Sometimes you got a little bit testy with us, but we're okay. We like that. We enjoy that. I hope you all have a fantastic weekend. Shabbat Shalom. Disconnect from everything unimportant. Connect to the things that are. And we will see you on Monday morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.